Well, everyone, my name is Bobby and I am an alcoholic.
Bobby.
And it certainly is a privilege to be here. If you ask Steve what I said when he asked me if I would do this, that's another story. I quickly snapped into my right mind and said, yeah, sure. Sure.
It was something like,
but you know, I'm a big believer in doing what God puts in front of me to do, you know, and that's what this, you know, that's what this talk is all about. It's all about, you know, he gave me my orders, you know, importance of God in your life, how faith is applied in real life experiences. And what do I do to increase my faith and relationship with God? You know, so this book and the 12 and 12 and Pass It On, AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, As Bill Sees It, they're all part of my repertoire. I wanted to know how they did it, you know, and so that's what I did very early on in sobriety. I don't know why. You know, I'm glad I'm stupid, you know, because, you know, I just came in here and I did whatever these guys said to do. And, I didn't quack at anything, you know, and to give you a little picture, a little synopsis of me. So a lot of guys have heard me speak before. Some of you haven't. You know, I was a 25-year-old punk kid out of New York with the Guinea t-shirt, the sunglasses, and I had 3 DUIs. I had burnt down a building. I had numerous fucking charges across the board for numerous things. But I was at the end of my rope. The drugs and the alcohol had beat me into a place of submission. And out of gratitude for some old man that I was living with and pissing on his bed that I was sleeping on, he told me I had to leave, and I'm like, Joe, I can't leave. I said, I want to go to detox. So he had already called my sister. She was on her way to pick me up to take me to this detox. And I ended up in Bark. And believe it or not, I got the message at Bark. So for you gentlemen that do H&I service work, thank you. You know, because I would not be here today if it wasn't for those 3 people. Ron, his daughter, Joyce, I think, and Marvin. And they were from the old Margate Club in off of 441 behind the Hess building. And I heard something that weekend that, you know, changed my life. And they said, you know, you should read this book. And the day you get out of here, you should make a meeting. And I did that. You know, I got out on a Thursday, and Thursday night I was at the men's meeting at the Margate Club. And I got there early. I'm sitting there by myself, and I seen a bunch of guys, you know, all talking, and they're F this and F that, and, you know, and they're all smiling, having a good time. And I'm like looking around like, wow, you know? And then when the meeting started, I saw the sign behind the chairman's head that said, you are not alone. And I put those 2 things together, that these guys were my guys. They were just like me, except for one thing. They were happy. I wasn't happy. I was 5 days without a drink. I was 25 years old. I was hopeless, worthless. I had nothing left. So my spiritual journey began, you know, and AA is the greatest thing in my life that's ever happened to me. It's given me a life. I hate to say way beyond my fondest dreams, because my fondest dreams are like way out there, you know. Like, I should have the frigging yacht. I should have millions in the bank. I should have the Rolls Royce. Those are my fondest dreams, you know. But in reality, AA has given me a life way beyond my fondest dreams, you know, and we'll get into that. But it all starts off for me with, you know, a couple of things that we hear at every meeting, you know, and I sponsor a lot of guys still, and I go through the book with them, and I'm big on words. You know, we'll stop and we'll think, you know, we launched into a vigorous, you know, set of actions, or whatever the line says, you know, but launched, you know, took off, we're taking off and vigorous, you know, you really got to work at this thing, you know, and then the next line that comes into my head all the time is, you know, at the end of the 12th step where it says, God could and would if he was sought, you know, and that's the big part. If he was sought, you know, I got to seek, you know, and it might take weeks, it might take months, it might take years, but you got to be seeking God. You know, I used to have a cleaning company. I used to tell the guys that work for me, like, the dirt isn't going to fucking jump out and look at you. You got to go find the dirt. You got to go look around and find the dirt. And for me, finding the God of my understanding, and I'm a Christian guy, so I believe in the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And I've had to seek that. And I'll prelib that with my first 10 years wasn't about the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. It was about the Father. It was about God. And if you talk to me about the other two, I tell you, go take a walk, have a nice time. That's good for you. That's not good for me. And but I kept on seeking. And as I kept on seeking, I found a true God of my understanding that provides me with everything I need. He provides me with the gratitude that I need to have for what I have. You know, because sometimes, I don't care how long you're sober, and I've been around here for a little while, you know, sometimes, you know, I tell my sponsors, you know, that old guy kind of lives like right below the surface, you know, and on any given day, you push a certain button, and that old MF-er, he's coming out. And I don't like that guy. I don't like when he comes out. He doesn't come out too often anymore, but he definitely has the ability to come out. I was told early on, you know, do 5 simple things every day, pray in the morning, make a meeting, talk to another alcoholic, read some literature. And out of common courtesy, which I knew nothing about because I was a very ungrateful child, you know, my mother would buy me this, and I was, why did she get me this, you know? She bought me a 77 Grand Prix in 1978. Baby blue, white interior, moon roof, spoke wheels. I had the hottest car in town, right? And I really left that place thinking, why didn't she buy me the Corvette? Like, how come she didn't go for like the extra $5,000 and get me the Corvette? So that out of common courtesy has meant a lot. And that's what the guy told me. He said, out of common courtesy, if you made it to bed that night sober, say thank you. Say thank you to that higher power that you pray to in the morning. You know, and I can tell you that I've honestly done that every night. You know, there's probably nights that, you know, whatever happened and I fell asleep and that didn't happen. But for the most part, every day of my sobriety, I've asked for help to stay sober that day. And I've said thank you at night. Then I started hearing things like, God is everything or he is nothing. And I started hearing things like, he was convinced of the need for moral inventory, confession of personal defects, restitution to those harmed, helpfulness to others, and the necessity of a belief and a dependence in God. So that's not somebody telling me this, you know, where I can go, maybe this guy's full of crap or what. Now, that's in the book. That's in the book. And to me, if it's in the book, that's what I'm supposed to do. This is the directions. And I know we're not good at directions. You know, you get the bicycle for your kid at Christmas, you get the directions to say, oh, fuck this, and you throw it over there. And you still put the bike together, and all of a sudden, like, the bike ain't working. Like, what happened? And then you go pick up the directions. And as ridiculous as that sounds, that's what so many men do in Alcoholics Anonymous. They get the book. We tell them, read the book. We even say now, you know, it's a lot different now. We even say, we'll sit down and read the book with you, you know, which they didn't do when I came in. They just said, here's the book, read it. And if you want to come back and talk about it, we'll talk about it. So I started believing in this necessity of a belief in the dependence of God. And it wasn't a big hurdle for me. You know, I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school. I didn't believe in any of it. I thought it was all BS, you know. But what I did know was that when I needed to make a score, and I said, Lord, please, please, I need this score. Or I'm in East Meadow Penitentiary in Long Island. And I'm like, oh, Lord, please get me out of here. And, you know, like 12:05, the gate opens, Leone, blah, 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 and I'm out. You know, and like, what I realized early in the sobriety was that every time I prayed, for the most part, God kept his end of the deal. And I never did. I walked out of that East Meadow Penitentiary at 12:30 at night, and my buddy who picked me up and his father that bailed me out, my buddy picked me up. We drove straight to the bar. I mean, I had just been praying to let me out of here. God, I'll stop drinking. I promise. Blah, 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 blah. Straight to the bar. Like, how does that happen? Like, you know, my favorite line in the whole big book is, we're mentally defective. And some of you might find that offensive, you know? You might like crazy better. But for me, I like mentally defective because I know how this thing works. You know, when Don was telling his little story about, you know, killing his wife, you know, I probably said, you need to get like a plastic liner first, you know, so that, you know, you don't get caught and, you know, you wrap them up and you just throw it away someplace. And, you know, that's a whole nother story. So God is everything or God isn't. And then I heard, so I'm going to twist this around a little bit. The third step says, turn my life and my will and my life over to the care of God. Years later, I got into another program and they twist those words around. They say, turn your life and your will over to the care of God. And I know that's what happened to me. Was I made a choice early on in sobriety that I was turning. I remember saying in detox, God, I don't care what I have to do. I don't care if I got to dig ditches for the rest of my life. And this is the guy with the gold rings, the chains, the bracelets, the Cadillac, blah, 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 blah. I am at a point in my life where I am in detox and I'm telling God, if I have to dig ditches for the rest of my life, that's fine. I don't care. I just don't want to ever feel like this again. You know, so I think I turned my will and my life and my will over to the care of God. At that point, I then started reading more into the book, and a lot of what I got today is out of We Agnostics, and it says, you know, lack of power, that was my dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. It had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, period. But where and how were we to find this power? And, you know, I think the biggest thing I hear in meetings all the time, especially, you know, if we've relapsed, and I happen to be one of those weird people that came in here, picked up a white chip and is standing here today, still with that white chip in my hand. It's all about finding that power. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. I mean, it can't even be any clearer. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problems. Well, I don't know about you, but that's some pretty strong language. You know, that if I seek this God, you know, he's going to solve all my problems. And did I really understand that? Did I really believe that all at the beginning? I'd probably say no, you know, but I did it. I just said, okay, I gotta develop a relationship with God. So what started happening to me is I started seeing miracles. I think it was Rick yesterday that kept on saying God incidences. Well, that's one way of putting it. To me, they were outright miracles. You know, the first thing I realized was, you know, I was staying sober. Like, I went from drinking, like, every day, most of the day, straight liquor, to I go to detox, I come out, I start praying to God in the morning, saying thank you at night, and all of a sudden I got a week, I got a month, I got 3 months, I got 6 months, like, that's like a miracle. Like, I was a maniac. Who burns down somebody's building because you don't like them? You know, so I saw a miracle. Second miracle was, I told you I had 3 DUIs. 2 of them were in the state of Florida. New York and Florida didn't connect back in 1985, so they didn't know about the one in New York. So I'm on my second DUI here in Florida. And in 1985, and Scott talked a little bit about this last night, by 1985, Mothers Against Drunk Drivers had taken over. They had taken over. It was no more, you know, okay, you know, but no. It was like, behind the back, where you going? And of course me, the last one was in Coconut Creek. You know, they slammed me against the hood, and I'm like, what's your badge number? Do you know who I am? Blah, 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 blah. So I get sober, and I got to go to DUI school. And I'm seeing the same girl. Now, I went to her while I was still drinking. And when she gave me my evaluation on this little computer thing, the result of that evaluation was I was a homicidal, suicidal maniac. That was the evaluation that came out from that little thing. You know, I was like, oh, okay. Doesn't sound too bad. So then I get sober and I'm seeing this girl, and I had to go for a lot of DUI classes. So now she sees me and I start coming in sober. I'm not stopping at Brownies to go to DUI school. You know, I'm going to DUI school sober. And she watches me. And about 6 or 9 months into, well, it's about friggin' time. About 6 or 9 months into seeing me come week after week sober, and I'm talking about my AA meetings, and I'm talking about my AA friends, and I'm talking about God, and I'm talking about all this good stuff. She says, you know what, Bob? I really see a difference in you. It seems like this AA thing's really working for you. She says, I'm going to make a recommendation to the Department of Motor Vehicles that they give you a hardship license. And in 1985, there was no hardship license. You were on your second DUI. It was 5 years. You were going without a license. You were not getting a license back. They didn't care if your wife had stage 7 cancer and you had to drive her for chemo. It didn't matter. You were not getting your license back. And this girl makes a recommendation that I go sit in front of the Department of Motor Vehicles. I go sit in front of a board of about 5 people. I have a bunch of letters from people in AA, you know. And I sit there and I answer their questions. And like a week or two later, and I just found this letter in a lockbox in my closet the other day. About 2 weeks later, I get a letter back that we're granting you a hardship license. I'm 18 months sober. I was like, no friggin' way. You know, but I didn't take that as a, you know, a coincidence. I took that as, that's a miracle. That's a miracle. How could that happen? I was the second person in the state of Florida that happened to at that time. There was a guy up in Jacksonville that the same thing happened to. But I was I immediately went out and bought a Cadillac and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, the old guy was very much still there. Sober, loving God, loving the whole thing. So after that, my first marriage, which provided me with like one of the greatest miracles in my life, was my daughter Angela. And you know, Donnie went through all of this with me back in the day, and it was a horrible divorce, and it was a big child custody battle. She was from another country. She was from Colombia, and at one point she took the baby to Colombia, and I was nuts. I was probably 5, 6, 7 years sober. Yes. Somewhere in there, in between 5 and 10 years. We'll put it that way. And, she takes the kid to Colombia, and I'm out of my mind. I'm looking to make plane rides into Colombia and find this kid, and I'm nuts. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm going to meetings every night, and every night I'm the guy. Anybody got a problem? I got a problem. My wife took my daughter and they're in Colombia, and I don't know if I'm ever going to see them again. And I don't know what to do. And, you know, and that's when I found out, you know, what I had been hearing for like a lot of years, you know, even when your ass falls off, put it in a brown paper bag, and we don't have them anymore, but put it in a Publix plastic bag and bring it to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and share it with your group. And I did that every night for weeks. And 6 weeks later, they came back. And it was a rough go. We had a rough time from the time she was 5 till she was about 13. Her mother painted me a picture of the monster, of monsters of monsters. I was no good. I was all that. By the time she was 13, she kind of figured things out. You know, she had been spending every other weekend. I'll back up a second. There was a buddy of mine, Nick. He had been divorced and had 2 children and had gone through the whole divorce custody thing with his thing. And he told me, he says, Bobby, he says, pick her up on time, drop her off on time, pay your support on time, do everything the way you're supposed to do it. Just do it. Just don't ever not do what you're supposed to do. And he was less years sober than me, but that didn't matter. He had the experience, you know, so that's what I did, you know, and by the time she's 13, she wants to come live with me. And so now she lives with me for 2, 3, 4 years. And then she went back to mom. And today, the relationship in between me and my daughter is like, she's 36 years old. She has no relationship with her mother, which is very sad, which I did not promote. I tried to get her to fix that, mend that. But I'm her rock today. I am her rock. She just had some issues going on with trying to get pregnant, and she's telling me about these tests that they had to do. And I mean, way too much information that I didn't want to hear, but what am I going to do? I'm her rock. She doesn't have anybody else that she can have those conversations. That's God in my life, that I became that man that she could come to and talk about anything. You know, she's married, she's got a husband, she's got some problems. So, oh, surprisingly, and she's open enough to tell me and talk to me about those problems. And she listens to like godly advice. Does she take it all? No, but she listens to it. She listens to it and she applies some of it. So, you know, after I broke up, after that marriage dissolved, I met another woman, and that's the woman that I'm married to today. She was a banker. I needed a loan. I had bad books and records. She thought I was cute. She gave me the loan. But the magic behind all that, the magic behind all that was that she had three kids. She had a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, and an 11-year-old. And I had decided that, you know, I was going to do this one correctly, and we dated for 2 years, and then we got engaged, and then we got married, and we came the Brady Bunch. And, you know, I came in as the man of the household, and God, if God ever was in my life, in my head, in my decision-making, it's been through this whole relationship. And it's, you know, some of my friends said, you know, when I told them I was marrying Becky, they were like, do you realize that she has three kids? I'm like, really? No, I never noticed that. 2 years I've been going out with her, I've never noticed that, you fucking idiot. Like, God just put it on my heart. God just put it on my heart because I saw what was happening. They had a dad, he lives in our neighborhood, but he really didn't have anything to do with his kids. He wasn't interested in having them every other weekend. He wasn't interested in being in their life. He wasn't going to their sporting events. I was doing the deal, you know, and I was doing the deal because I'm an AA member. I'm doing the deal because God's telling me, and let me tell you, I broke up with this woman 3 times in that 2 years we broke up, you know, because there was a lot of red flags. Now, but God kept on telling me, Bob, these kids need you. This woman need you. I need you here. This is where you need to be. And I said in my small group the other day, you know, doing the right thing doesn't always feel good. So get that out of your head. You know, sometimes doing the right thing feels like really bad. Like, I don't want to do this, you know, but I got to go with what God tells me. And God told me I needed to be there. And we're together almost 30 years. We're married 28 years next month. And so last week, it was my grandson's 5th birthday. Hear that? My grandson's. My grandson's 5th birthday. And their natural father is there. He shows up more now that he's got grandkids, a little bit. You know, he's sitting there. And it's cake time and present time. And I'm sitting on a couch. Like, they're there at the table, and they're all eating ice cream over present. I'm sitting back here on the couch, and I'm looking at this guy who I've always invited to every Christmas, every Thanksgiving, every birthday, every graduate. I've always invited him. I wanted him to be part of his kids and my wife. And then there's their three kids, and then there's the three grandchildren, you know? And I'm sitting back on this couch, and I'm looking at this, and I'm like, You're unbelievable, God. Like, this is unbelievable. What he's done through me, through the marriage, these three kids have grown up to be great human beings. They all have great careers. It's all just good, you know? And that wasn't, you know, Bob Leone wanted to run. He wanted to run, you know? But because I listened and because I obeyed, I have a great family. They have great families. And it's just a great thing. One of the next miracles that happened in my life were, you know, in the early 2000s, my wife had filed bankruptcy personally because she forgot to tell me when we got married that she was $50,000 upside down in her house. And she had $20,000 worth of consumer debt. And then after we got married, she says, oh, by the way. And I'm like, what? You know? And I said, well, there's only one thing that's happening here. you need to file bankruptcy and you need to get this, you know, straightened out. I ain't carrying all that debt. I think you should have told me this before we got married, you know, just, you know, full disclosure. But that's not the way it went down. And then shortly after that, I owned a restaurant and I went upside down in the restaurant and I ended up having to file bankruptcy. And so now here we are. We got all these kids. The house is going and I need to buy another house. And out of nowhere, I get a check from a long lost aunt who passed away that my family never even really knew. She lived in Greece. We didn't even know she was somebody, you know, but she had moved back to the States somewhere along the line. And when she died, she left all her brothers and sisters' children her estate. So I get a check in the mail for like $70,000. I'm like, woo, look at this, you know, but I got to get a mortgage, you know, and with the bankruptcy, just like a few months prior, a mortgage is not looking too good, you know, and one of my buddies in AA happens to be a mortgage broker. And he's like, how much you got to put down? I said, I don't know, 50,000. He says, yeah, no problem. I got your mortgage. So it was a little high. It was like 9.9%. I got the mortgage. You know, to me, another miracle. You know, shortly after that, you know, I had a little pickup truck. She had a little Mazda something or other. And we got four kids. And like, you know, there's six of us. And, you know, I like the clown car thing, but it really didn't work out for like the family. So we're looking at, you know, minivans. And I'm telling my wife, we're not going to get a minivan. It's not going to happen. We just filed bankruptcy. There's no way that it's not going to happen. So she said, well, let's just go look. So we just go look. And we're walking around the lot and she's looking at, you know, this one and that one. And I'm like, honey, next thing I know, I hear, hey, Bobby Leone, how you doing? And it's this big guy, Rick Shute. He's the general manager of this dealership. And he says, what do you want? Blah, blah. I tell him the whole story. We don't have no money. He says, what do you like? That one over there. He says, well, take it for a test run. So I said, Rick, we have no money. We have no money. We have no credit. We have nothing. He says, take it for a ride. So we take it for a ride. It's a Saturday. We come back. I said, yeah, it's very nice. He said, take it on for the weekend. Just take it on for the weekend. So I said, Rick, we have no money. We both filed bankruptcy less than 2 years ago. He says, just take it home. Bring it back Monday morning. He says, okay, you're all done. He says, I've called up the president of, you know, financing for GMAC. You put one extra security month payment on it, make three payments, and you drive out of here. What? Like $600? I'm like, yeah. And we drive out of there with a minivan that took care of our family for like the next 10 years, you know, and, you know, was that a coincidence? I don't know. I find that to be a miracle. You know, that was just another miracle. I look for miracles. You know, miracles happen to us every day. And sometimes we're just blind. We're just blind. We're not looking for them. We don't see them. You know, but I've trained myself to look at how, you know, sometimes, you know, I didn't make it through that light. Or I didn't make it, you know, because there was a car crash coming, you know, 10 minutes later. And if I would have been there, you know, I would have been the one that was involved. I look at stuff like that. So as I've gone through this journey, and let me preface that, you know, I make myself sound like I'm this, you know, spiritual human being that's just followed God's will and everything he's done. Well, when I bought my first house, I was like almost 5 years sober in Port St. Lucie. You know, I bought this house and now I had to furnish this house. I was working at a country club And, you know, they have like beautiful china. And I didn't have any china. So over the course of like a month, like two, I brought home service for 12, you know, from the knife, fork, and spoons to the wine glasses to the water glasses to the dishes to the salad plate to the coffee cup to the saucer, you know. So, yeah, I was in the program. Yeah, I had a great relationship with God. Yeah, I was a spiritual human being. But, yeah, I was still doing what I wanted to do and not always following, you know, what God wanted me to do. Another incident like that is I'm like 12 years sober and we're living in that house that I bought with that $70,000 and the pool pump goes out. And at that time, there was a lot of foreclosed houses up in Port St. Lucie. So one night I got the bright idea. Well, that nobody's living in that house. They don't need that pool pump. So I'm out there at 12 o'clock at night fucking clipping the wires and I'm running down the street with the pool pump in my arm. I'm saying, God, I know this is wrong, but please don't let me get caught, you know. I'm like out of my mind. I know I'm doing wrong, you know. There's not many verses in the Bible that I know. But if you want to look up the one that I know, that's one of them. But Romans chapter 7, verses 14 through 21 will tell you exactly, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. If you want to look it up today, look it up. Romans chapter 7, verses 14 through 21, that describes me to a T. It talks about just doing the same things over and over again that you know are against God's will. But you do them anyway. And you don't even know why. You don't even know why you do that. So somewhere around that time, I ended up joining a different program. I never left AA. AA is my base. AA is my home. I'm an AA guy. But I wanted more. I wanted to find more. So when me and my wife got together, we joined the church. We wanted to bring the kids to church, went to church. Like I told you, if you talk to me about Jesus in the first 10 years of my sobriety, I'd say, yeah. Hey, if I met a guy like Stevie, I would be like, hey, man, get it out of here. Huh? You know, you're way over the top. But after about 10 years, I started having a thirst. I needed more. I wanted more. So we had been in this church for a while. I joined the Bible study. And now I'm actually arguing with these old timers in the Bible study. Like, you guys have no idea what you're talking about. Like, we AAers, we really do this stuff, you know? And they're like, yeah, just keep coming, you know? Just keep coming. And so, you know, I went through the Bible with them and I've been through the Bible, you know, four times, five times, cover to cover, you know, and been in different Bible studies. But what ended up happening was that my church ended up starting a Celebrate Recovery program. And I really wanted to give back to God. I really wanted to give back to God. And what they needed was they had a bunch of great volunteers from the church that wanted to, you know, have a recovery program for the church. But they didn't really have anybody there that knew the program of recovery. And this one pastor, Mike, who I was a little friendly with at the time, and we ended up being best friends, and he passed away like 2-3 years ago. And much to my not liking, he knew I was a strong AAer, and he reeled me in, you know? And he said, Bobby, I need you in this and that. And I became part of the leadership, and I was part of that program inside the church for 5 years with him, and we grew a team, and we got to be a pretty big Celebrate Recovery, which is no small feat. It's not, you know, it's not like AA. It's a different deal. It's a great deal, and I see all the benefits from it, but it's just not AA, so it's a lot harder to build. And after 5 years, I kind of got a little bored with that. And I had an opportunity to bring Celebrate Recovery into our local jail. And I brought Celebrate Recovery into Rock Road, which is a local jail in Fort Pierce, for 5 years. Wow. Every Friday night, I had two guys with me. We had great audio visuals. So I had all the praise and worship on the thing. I had 30, 40 men out there. We're singing, you know, hallelujah. With, you know, if I can only imagine, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I would dread going there on some Friday nights. I'd be like, oh, man, I got to do this. Like, oh, God, what'd you do to me? You know, and inevitably, every Friday night when I left there, I was just like, blown out of my socks. I mean, I walked out of that jail walking this high off the ground. You know, I remember one night I walked into Walmart to do some shopping, and these two people saw me, and I'm walking down, fucking down. I'm like so happy. And it's late. It's like, you know, 10 o'clock at night. You know, these two people saw me, and they said, man, you're in awful good mood. I was like, yeah, man, I just came from jail. So I'm like, what? I said, yeah, it's a long story, but I do it every Friday night, and it's just a great thing for me. Electronics. Another big part of my spiritual journey, my relationship with God, is this right here. I've been coming on retreats since the early 90s. It's got to be the early 90s. I moved out to Port St. Lucie in 1989. I think it was a year or two later, somebody invited me to go to the Cenacle. They were having a card game in the back room, so I thought, okay, I'll go. There's a card game. But the retreat blew me away. And I'm looking at Jason, I'm looking at Ray, and I hope that's what you walk away this weekend with. Like, I walked away from that retreat, like, I want to go next week. Like, I don't even want to leave. Can I stay here? You know? And retreats have become such a big part of my sobriety. This is my every 6 month, take my two fingers, push them into a 220 outlet, and I get juiced. I get juiced. I get high on God again. You know, it all comes back. All the miracles. I mean, I gave you 3, 4, 5, maybe. There's thousands of miracles that have happened over the course of my sobriety. I mean, literally thousands that have come across in my sobriety. You know, we who have traveled this dubious path beg you to lay aside prejudice even against organized religion. And yeah, we beg you. Whatever your prejudices are, you know, I don't like the synagogue. I don't like the church. I don't like the BS. Lay it down. Try it. Try it. Go. Maybe you'll find something that you never thought you'd find in your life. Maybe it's sitting there waiting for you. But if you don't go because you got this prejudice in your head that, oh, those Catholic priests, they raped all those boys and blah, blah, all this BS. You block yourself from the sunlight of the Spirit. You block yourself from allowing God to come into your life and do even more. Like, you know, I listen to a lot of rocketed.org. So, like, that guy's whole circuit speech thing, I can do it by heart. You know, like, you go into this big buffet. You know, and there's all this food on this buffet. You know, there's prime rib, there's shrimp, there's all of this stuff. And you want the crouton. Why would you go to this beautiful buffet and take the crouton? Why would you do that? You know? And I'm not making fun of you, Stevie B. I love you. I just think that it's a perfect analogy. It's a perfect analogy. I'm a food guy. I've set up Sunday morning breakfast, you know, buffet, and you know, you got all this nice stuff, and you take this little thing. You know, that's what AA is. AA is a buffet of things that, you know, go on. I will close out in a second with a couple of little things. When we became alcoholics, crushed by self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God is either or he isn't. What is our choice to be? What's our choice to be? You know, do I sit here and say, oh yeah, I believe in God and yeah, blah, 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 blah. You know, or do I have a fever, I can't think of the word I want. Do I have a fever to go seek God, to read books like Sermon on the Mount? You know, we talked about it yesterday. You know, the first line of Sermon on the Mount, life is difficult, period. Period. Life is difficult. Road less traveled. I was there yesterday. It's another day. I'm old. I'm a little old. Road less traveled. Life is difficult, period. And then he goes on to say that once the reader understands this, then they probably got a shot at having a decent life. You know, and that's what we got here. You know, just because we get sober doesn't mean I'm not going to go through the death of my mother. I'm not going to go through the divorces. I'm not going to go through the child custody cases. I'm not going to go through, you know, the financial difficulties. I'm not going to go through. I mean, I can name all the like stuff that has gone on that in reality, I worried needlessly about, but my humanness took over because it would have ended up the way it's ended up, and it's ended up pretty good. You know, so I'm a byproduct of, you know, seeking God. And I will close out with this, I think. It's been a great retreat. This is an honor to be up here today. I hope everybody here has gotten as much out of the retreat as I have. It's been phenomenal. The speakers, each one of them hit me in a different way. Made me think about things that I haven't thought about in a while. But this is the best of the best of the big book. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.